It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Many of us were not alive on December 7th, 1941, when President Franklin Delano Roosevelt uttered these words.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific.
This Saturday marks the 72nd anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, which propelled the United States into World War II. I'm joined now by a Pittsburgh area man who served in the Navy during World War II and took part in the Normandy invasion after D-Day. Joining us by phone, Pittsburgh native Al Crawford. Mr. Crawford, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
You were, of course, listening to the radio and probably heard that speech from Franklin Delano Roosevelt on December 7th, 1941. After you heard those words, after you heard about the attack, what was your reaction?
I was very angry. We had just come home from church and turned on the radio shortly after noon on the 7th, and I didn't even know where Pearl Harbor was. And I asked my dad, and he told me. My dad was a Spanish War veteran, and I was quite angry at the report of loss of life and of ship sunk. I was particular to the Navy. I liked the Navy. There was a movie, I think it was Submarine D-1 or something, with Pat O'Brien, and I watched that as a kid, and that kind of made me like the Navy.
So you then decided you were going to join the Navy, and you weren't going to wait, were you?
No, I was ready to go. I was in the 10th grade of high school, and without bragging, I had a fairly high IQ, and I got bored in high school. I got bored to death. If the teacher explained something, I got it, and if she had to go over it two or three times with other kids asking questions, she lost me. So I was happy to get out of high school and get in the Navy. I got more education in the Navy than I ever got in high school.
So how soon did you march down to that recruiter's office?
I was in line bright and early the morning of the December the 8th, Monday morning. And to my surprise, there was hundreds of others down there, too. It was a madhouse. Recruiters probably enlisted maybe 3 to 5 men a month. And here's hundreds lining up on the morning of 8 December to join the armed forces.
I understand that at first you did not pass your physical. What happened?
I was working as a messenger for Pitt Photolitho in Pittsburgh, PA, delivering blueprints. And every day after work, I went to Fanny Farmer Chocolates and bought a pound of chocolates and went home. And then after supper in the evening, I listened to radio programs, no television then, and I ate the whole pound of chocolates. And I was eating a pound of chocolates a day so that I did not pass the urinalysis. And they told me to stop the chocolates and eat bananas, which I did. And a few days later, I went back and passed the test.
Eventually, you ended up serving in Normandy as part of the D-Day invasion. You were on a salvage ship towing a barge with high explosive. This sounds like dangerous work.
It was very dangerous work. We did not go over with the first wave on December the 6th. We were almost June the 6th. We went over almost 2 weeks later because of towing that barge of high explosives. They didn't want us in the beach area. when the beach area was under aerial attack by German planes. The USS Partridge, a sister ship of ours, did go over on D-Day, and they had a German submarine put a torpedo in the barge of explosives, and it apparently blew a hole in it so big that the barge sank like immediately, and the Partridge crew members could not detach the towing cable in time, and the Partridge got pulled under with a large loss of life.
So you had to navigate around these minefields that the Germans left in the waters in that area. So there was certainly a chance that you could have lost your life as well.
Oh, you bet your boots. There was one DE. On June the 19th, the greatest storm to hit the English Channel in 100 years struck on June 19th, and it just about destroyed the artificial harbor that was built. And it took a destroyer, the USS Rich, and put it up over what is called a Rhino Ferry, which is nothing but a bunch of like a barge, and broke its keel. Well, we didn't know if we were going to stay on that beach or get kicked back into the channel, so we were ordered to go alongside and to get the decoding machine out of that ship, which we did. Well, when we went in there, I was at the wheel of the ship. I steer the ship, and I was steering with my knees cracked. They said, don't stand up straight. Keep your knees cracked, because if we hit a mine, if your knees are not cracked, you'll blow up and hit your head on the overhead and break your skull and your neck. So it was touch and go, and we did. We got the decoding machine, and we got out of there. But the English Channel, we were always leery. A lot of times we'd be steaming at night, and I'd be in my bunk, hearing the water going past the side of the ship and be afraid of explosion. Mines were very bad there. A lot of ships hit mines in the English Channel.
We're talking with Al Crawford, a Pittsburgh area Navy veteran who is a World War II vet, and he took part in the Normandy invasion after D-Day. He's telling us about the stories of that invasion that he took part in and how he survived. When the war ended and you got back to the United States, Al, what kind of reception did the soldiers receive, and how did it compare with the kind of reception soldiers receive today?
Oh, in our return home, I mean, people couldn't do enough for us. I mean, we were welcome big time. I mean, it was just fantastic. Every boy in my neighborhood in that age bracket, 17 to 19, all my friends, every one of us got in the military except one, who had flat feet, and he was heartbroken. And after the war, I met him and found out that he served in the Navy as a deep-sea diver.
Hmm.
And I said, well, how'd you get in the Navy? But what happened, as the war progressed, they kept lowering the physical standards. And they took him with his flat feet, because being a deep-sea diver, it didn't make any difference if he had flat feet.
Al Crawford, you were in the news recently when you were awarded a Medal of Honor from the French government, a medal that had to be replaced after it was originally stolen from the home of the French consul in Pittsburgh. What does it mean to you to know that Pittsburgh will finally have an official World War II memorial as of this Friday?
Well, I think it's nice that we're recognized for what we did. When they speak of the greatest generation, that's a generation this country is never going to see again. I understand almost 70% of the young men who apply for entry into the armed forces today are rejected for various reasons, one of the biggest being grossly overweight. So you're not going to find a generation like you did in World War II again. If we have a bigger trouble, we're in trouble. getting enough men to fight.
Well, will you be at the dedication of the memorial on Friday?
I hope to make it, Lord willing. I'm very close to 90, and I walk with a walker. I'm going to make every effort to go.
I've been speaking with a Navy veteran, Al Crawford, who took part in the Normandy invasion after D-Day. Mr. Crawford, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Can I tell you one more thing?
Sure, go ahead.
The French Medal of Honor I got was the equivalent of our Congressional Medal of Honor. It's the highest award the French government can award. And I had to put in an application and document with photographs and paperwork what I did at Normandy. From June to October, I was instrumental in keeping the beaches open. We had a reunion of our ship's crew, and they wanted a guest speaker, and we couldn't find. I said, if you have a World War II vet, yes. They couldn't find one, so I said, I'll speak. And I started by telling the group, I said, you were in the most valuable unit in Normandy. And I paused because they wondered, what are you talking about? Well, what I was talking about is, if we didn't keep those forces supplied with everything from toilet paper to bombs, the invasion would have failed. So we had a very important job, and that's why I got that French medal for my efforts in keeping the beaches open and the supplies flowing across those beaches. And that's a story in itself.
Well, Al, we are certainly glad that you got the medal, and then after it was stolen, that you were able to receive a replacement medal, because you certainly deserve it. And we thank you so much for being a part of our program today and for your service to our country. Al Crawford, Navy veteran, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. On Friday, Pittsburgh will unveil the city's first World War II monument with a dedication ceremony at the location of the new memorial on the North Shore. The basic design has glass panels and granite tablets mounted on tall stainless steel spires. Plans call for the monument to be illuminated at night. Larry Kirkland is the artist who designed the Southwestern Pennsylvania World War II Memorial, as it's called, and he joins us now by phone from Washington, D.C. Larry Kirkland, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
I'm happy to be here.
There is a lot of glass involved in your design for this monument, and there's a reason for that. Would you explain what it is?
Well, when we got started thinking about this many, many years ago, this, by the way, this is the longest project I've ever been involved in. We first got started in December of 2001. And as a design team, I'm the major form giver, but Design Workshop, a landscape architectural firm out of Denver, is my partner in it. We really wanted to use materials that are associated with Pittsburgh. So stainless steel and glass really were always in the forefront of our idea.
And what is contained in those glass panels?
The glass panels are printed in a new process called the Alice process. That is, it digitally prints ceramic frit, which is then high-fired in an autoclave so that it makes it a permanent image on the glass. And the images that are of the memorial are images that we collected of what was going on at the time, some iconic images from World War II, the bombing of Paris, the concentration camp survivors, Pearl Harbor attack. Those are very large images that form the walls of the memorial. And then there's two collage panels that have images mainly from Pittsburgh and from some specific individuals who contributed images of themselves at the time or in some cases of their parents. These are images taken from Southwestern Pennsylvania from the people who were serving and working at that time.
And you mentioned the materials that are certainly an integral part of this area, the glass and the steel. But why did you choose this particular approach, Larry, to your memorial?
Well, we've had several approaches. As I said, this has been an ongoing project. The original site selected by the original committee back in the year 2001 was farther east along the North Shore. It was the space between the 6th and 7th Street bridges. There are currently several pieces of sculpture that are there, most of them not in very good shape. It was an international competition, and we were selected as finalists, and after coming up with a concept, I think there were four other finalists. We were selected by the committee, and at that time, the mayor's office had a liaison to the World War II vets, and they had given this site as the place for a World War II memorial. If you know the North Shore, there's already a Korean War memorial and a Vietnam Veterans War memorial. After 3 years, it was determined that site was not allowed for a World War II memorial. It had already been dedicated to other public artworks. And so it took another year of searching to find a new place. It eventually moved north and into the location where we are now. That had recently been totally renovated from being an industrial site to being what is now the North Shore Park. With each move in location, we had four locations. We had four different designs for this, so that the one that is finally now installed is the fourth and final design.
We're talking with artist Larry Kirkland, who is the designer of the Southwestern Pennsylvania World War II Memorial, which is being dedicated this Friday. I was going to ask you if this was a difficult process, but clearly from what you're telling us, it was a long and arduous road to completion.
It really has been a challenge. I think that the veterans whose idea this was, nobody had any idea how complicated building something like this would be, and had no idea really how to go about fundraising for it. We have been through a number of leadership changes, a number of fundraising tactics, and it finally began to pull together about 4 years ago when Mark Schneider, a well-known developer in Pittsburgh, took on a leadership role. And his aunt, Sheila Connolly, has been on the executive board since the very beginning, and she served in the military and really pushed Mark into that leadership role. And he's the one who really pushed it forward and raised the funds and got the SCA involved so that we actually had a real location. And tragically, he died in a bicycle accident a couple of years ago, and that left us adrift again until a new leader could come on board and get the process moving again.
Is there a special feeling that you have about the soldiers who fought in World War II that perhaps informed your work here?
Well, I'm a military kid. My dad graduated from the Naval Academy in 1942. He was in the class of 1943, and 1942, as America entered the war, the Naval Academy graduated both the seniors and the juniors. He was in the junior class because they needed young men, and he met my mom on a blind date on his graduation, and after 3 days they got engaged, and after 3 months they got married. She was a 19-year-old freshman at Wellesley. He was a career man, and all of his buddies, I would call them my military uncles, had all served in World War II. So, I have two older brothers who went to the Naval Academy, and a number of nephews, nieces, brother-in-law who all serve in the military in different services. I grew up on military bases, and every 2 years we moved to a new one. So it's the military is really kind of part of my background, and because my dad served, he was a gunnery officer on the USS Doyle at D-Day. He didn't talk about it much until he was much older, but just growing up in the military, you get a real sense of what that sacrifice and service is. Pittsburgh had a very unique role in the war. It was one of the cities termed the arsenal of democracy, and very, very quickly, the industries in Pittsburgh shifted from making pickles to making airplanes. And that's one of the rich stories that we wanted to convey in this memorial.
And what kind of a feeling do you hope people will get from seeing the Southwestern Pennsylvania World War II Memorial?
Well, we approach this in a very, very different way from other memorials. I live in Washington, D.C., so I'm surrounded by memorials all the time. And the Vietnam Veterans Memorial here is iconic, and it's a much visited and an emotional experience. It's been called by an art historian who really is researching memorials and monuments that it's called a virtual cemetery. It has all the names of those who died. We didn't want to do that for the World War II Memorial in Pittsburgh, first of all, because there was no way to find out who had died. We wanted to tell a bigger story, and we didn't want it to be an abstract thing. We wanted it to be a real story, that because my dad has passed away and most of his generation have passed away. So those oral histories are gone, and as a group, we brought in historians and writers to look deeply into the history of the war as it affected Pittsburgh, and to bring those stories in reality into the memorial. So it's a place where when you go there, you will be reading passages from people who were very invested in different parts of what was going on in Pittsburgh. One of them was a businessman, Robert Glick, who was traveling in Germany starting in 1936, seeing what was going on with the Jews being deported. And he personally got many, many hundreds of Jews out of Germany. We have stories of guys from Pearl Harbor and guys at D-Day. We have stories of Rosie the Riveters. And historian David McCulloch, who grew up in Pittsburgh, recalls what it was like being a kid during the war and how patriotic everybody felt. So the feeling that I hope people are going to come away with is what an amazing generation happened at that time, and what they did, everybody, not just those who served, but those who worked in the factories and the kids and the families, that service and sacrifice was really part of that generation. And after the war, the leaders of Pittsburgh, political and business leaders, decided that the old Pittsburgh had to change. And starting in 1946, they started something called Renaissance Pittsburgh, which was to change the city, to clean it up, to no longer be Smoke City, but to be a new and more contemporary city. We wanted you to see that from the memorial. So where you're standing and looking through the images in the glass, you're looking at downtown Pittsburgh. It's focused on the point. And we really wanted this generation and generations to come to understand that the Pittsburgh that they're in now is really because of the generation of World War II.
Larry Kirkland is the artist who designed the Southwestern Pennsylvania World War II Memorial, Pittsburgh's first World War II Memorial, being dedicated along the city's North Shore on Friday. He joined us by phone from Washington. Larry Kirkland, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up, the stories behind our favorite animated holiday classics. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.